Blog Talk Radio.
Election Special 2016 with Brad. Our lighthearted yet spontaneous discussion of the election 2016 and of our political sensibilities in the year 2016. And will there ever be a third party that ever wins anything? I mean, one would have thought that if we ever wanted a third party, this would be the year for it, but nobody seems to be going that way. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. We're joined by my wonderful friend, Brad Schilling. He's on the line now. Brad, are you there?
I am here.
Ah, and you're sounding wonderful. Excellent.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yes, so the sound quality is good. You don't have to worry. It's kind of funny because I guess in our preparations for our movie review show, we started having, you know, in the lead up to the show, we started having a political discussion, and it was quite amazing and inspired. We were just kind of shooting from the hip, and it was, I felt bad we didn't have the recorder turned on.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where we got on a roll and, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, we just started, I think it's more than that actually. Maybe closer to a half hour, and we just started to talk about various aspects about all the things that's going on here with the 2016 elections and all the crazy stuff and you know, possible third party candidates and you know, the scandals, the controversial things said, you know, by, you know, two of the candidates, and you know, we just really got on the roll, really covered some in-deep things. So hopefully we can replicate that here tonight. And seeing that New Jersey and California and some other states are having primaries tonight that are significant, you know, this is probably a good time to do a show about this.
Absolutely. And, yeah, you know, actually we're competing with primary coverage. That's kind of funny. I should actually turn it on just to sort of keep it going in the background. And I'm sure the Mets are losing, so I'd rather turn the primary coverage on. But it's California, and what's the other state? I'm sorry.
Well, New Jersey. I think New Jersey may over with, and probably Hillary's going to take New Jersey, I would anticipate, and maybe she's already clinched. We could find out. But because I think they closed at 8 o'clock. Of course, California – being 3 hours behind where we are on Eastern Standard Time, you know, Pacific Standard Time. I think, I don't know what time they close, but they're not closed now, that's for sure. It's only 5:35 out there right now. So,
yeah. Well, the polls are closed in Jersey. They have, well, obviously Trump won the Republican primary there. Hillary,
yeah.
I just saw, was ahead. I believe it was 58% to 42%, it looked like, with 1% of the precincts reporting. And usually, sometimes, yeah, it's actually 57.6% to 42.4%. So,
okay.
But it's a small number of precincts reporting, but we'll see what happens.
Right. And they haven't called it yet, apparently. And it's hard to call it with 1% of the precincts reporting. That's just too early. I know the press loves to be like the first to call it, you know, it's like a competitive thing, I think, with them. I mean, look what happened with Gore and Bush in 2000. I think CBS called that election prematurely, as it turns out. And then, you know, the rest with the hanging chads and all the other crazy stuff that went for days after that, they still didn't have a winner. So,
yeah,
that's how it is with the media. And they like to be the first to tell you what happened.
Yeah, this is true, but I'll be honest, I've been smart. I haven't been watching any coverage of any of this. I've been enjoying reading about it, you know, reading third party, you know, reading non-mainstream accounts of everything, but I've been avoiding most of the coverage for the most part. I do admit it. This is about the first time I'm turning on the TV and following results, but it's more just for the heck of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say this whole season has been, I mean, is surreal the right word for all this? It's remarkable.
That's a very appropriate word. I mean, you have candidates in both parties, both major parties, and I think there's a lot of people that think that neither party sent their best candidate. On the Republican side, you had 16 candidates, many of those who I think were presidential, and yet Trump, with his big personality, doing things differently than is conventional, high enough percentage of Republican voters were attracted to that, and that's what helped him to victory. It seems like the more controversial he got, the better he did, and that's just goes against what anyone could ever predict. Then on the Democratic side, a lot of good candidates were running. Hillary Clinton didn't run against a strong field of candidates. Bernie Sanders got stronger. I don't think he was particularly a strong candidate in the beginning, but he's got a following. I have to give him credit for creating a following. It's kind of strange how the oldest candidate has the youngest following in this election.
It is kind of bizarre.
Effectively.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me a little bit of Ron Paul 4 years ago. I mean, he started they're very different people, obviously, but he started drawing some major – after the election, actually. He didn't make it through the process, but he started drawing some major crowds at small arenas and around the country, starting to preach the whole libertarian message. And Sanders, he's certainly not a libertarian, but he's kind of replicating that on a similar scale.
Yeah, I think he is. And you mentioned Ron Paul. I remember when he ran, it was 2012, is that correct? Or 2008,
yes.
I don't remember which year.
Well, both actually.
But I remember,
what
this? Or he ran
He also
times?
Ran in 2008. Yep.
Oh, okay,
a little more successful.
I remember him getting big crowds. Like he really had a niche following, and Sanders has had that too, partially because he has a message. Hillary Clinton, I think she's running a very empty campaign with really no message. I mean, she's basically running on her last name. I mean, she's not running on much more than that. Maybe her gender and maybe, you know, the attitude, it's my turn to be president. But other than that, there's really nothing much she's running on. There's, you know, she's flip-flopped on numerous issues. Go to YouTube, you can find numerous videos on that. And really there's no substance to – she's never had any substance anyway – but in this campaign, there's no substance. There's nothing there except her last name. And, you know, one talk show radio host, not one of the anger ones, one of the middle-of-the-road ones, made a comparison in 2008 when Brett Favre of the Green Bay Packers was having a really good year in football.
Right.
And he was saying, back in 2008 when Hillary also ran for president, he was saying, now, would the Green Bay Packers put in Deanna Favre, the wife of Brett Favre, in as quarterback just because Brett Favre could throw a football? And, of course they wouldn't do that. Now, football and politics, I mean, there is sort of an apples and oranges here, but the point is, why are we voting for who we're voting for? Why are we voting for Hillary Clinton? Is it because her husband Bill was president? I think for a lot of voters – that's an attraction.
Well, I guess why does anyone – I mean, a bunch of people – there are a bunch of people who stay up with the issues and all that, but a bunch of people are just going on some very vague generalities. I would like to know the sort of the one adjective that these people sort of look at to vote what they choose. I mean, I'm hearing from some, you know, just I try to listen sometimes to blurbs. I'm hearing the word experience for her. Even if that may technically be true,
but go ahead.
Yeah, well, even if that's technically true. Oh, I accidentally switched to MSNBC. Let me purge that from my TV. Okay, let me get back to the other. Let me get back to the other evil network here. Yes, of course, she's gained some experience the last number of years, but she's not used it in a humane and productive way a lot of the time.
Yeah, I consider her experience with an asterisk kind of like Barry Bonds' home run record.
Oh, another good comparison. Yeah.
Her experience, the one thing she has the most experience with are scandals. Look at all the scandals.
Precisely.
Dating back to the 70s. I mean, mm-hmm. She has more scandals that end with the word of the suffix gate than Richard Nixon.
Pretty much,
or
yeah.
Or the New England Patriots. You know, even the New England Patriots don't have that many scandals. So it's just so many. And it's like, okay, what other presidential candidate has had this many scandals as a part of the background? What other presidential candidate is under investigation, two different investigations from the FBI, namely Emailgate and the Clinton Foundation issue? I haven't heard any presidential candidate under any investigation. I don't know if that's ever happened. And yet she's a front runner. It just makes me scratch my head. And the thing about the Democrats is that the good Democrats didn't, you know, probably the better qualified Democrats didn't even run for president, like Joe Biden. I think he's much more presidential than she is, and probably more than any of the other contenders that have since dropped out of the race. And a couple of other Democrats would have been good. Evan Bayh from my home state of Indiana. Yeah, I kind of probably lean on him for that. But look at, you know, talk about experience. He's been a governor and a senator, this guy, Evan Bayh. He's been both.
Right. Familiar.
He has the experience. Hillary was elected because of her celebrity status as senator in New York. And I'll get more on that in a minute because I do want to talk about that some more. Another one is Bill Richardson, the former governor of New Mexico. I thought he seemed like a good candidate in 2008 who, unfortunately for him, had an early exit. So those are three examples of Democrats that I think would be better suited for the presidency.
And why do you think they don't make it to the front?
Well, I think, again, her last name and I think celebrity status is part of her thing. And you know, I talked a minute about the New York Senate race. Do you remember in 2000 when she ran for senator of New York? Or let's just say when she carpetbagged her way to New York. That's probably the better way to put it.
Right.
It was shocking that she was polling at 50%, dead even with Rudy Giuliani, who was her opponent in the race. And I'm thinking, there is no comparison. Giuliani has been, you know, he's a New Yorker through and through. Hillary is probably no more New York than Newt Gingrich. And, you know, and so,
unfortunately,
go ahead.
No, unfortunately, New York means Democrat and New York means liberal. So that outweighed the time.
Yeah, that did help. But Giuliani has been a district attorney. Of course, he had a great run as mayor. He cleaned up the city. He was widely praised by both political parties for that. And yet, he was having a difficult time in the polls. He should have been in the head 80% to 20%. And it makes you think about, okay, what are the voters really voting for? Celebrity status. It makes you think about the psychology of the voting public out there. Granted, the fact she's a Democrat and has that label, that probably would help her a little bit. But then let's turn to Hillary's second opponent when Giuliani dropped out of the race, Rick Lazio. Do you remember that name?
Oh, yeah, I remember Rick.
Yeah, well, he was my congressman
very
in Long Island, so I had heard of him. But why? I guess the question is, the media never reported this, but his qualifications are he was a four-term congressman. He beat a popular 18-year incumbent for Congress his first year.
Right.
He was a Suffolk County district attorney. He had other elected roles and appointed roles in government. He had more experience than she did, especially New York experience. I think the question is, Sean Hannity, no matter what you think of him, did ask a very good question to people. What did Hillary ever do for New York? Name one thing. And nobody can answer that question. And,
right.
You know, I'm just perplexed. And Hillary actually won by 12 percentage points over Rick Lazio, who was way more qualified, not even close. If people really did their homework and understood the qualifications of the candidates that were there, I think he would have had a different result. And that was a stepping stone to where she is now.
Here's the amazing thing about this election. She's actually doing something that was talked about for that her husband did. I guess it was in the 1992 elections. And that is he's triangulating. She's triangulating. Remember that term?
Yeah, I've heard
that they
used. Yeah.
You know, she's kind of doing the same thing because obviously Bill had two sort of opponents that he was dealing with, Perot and Bush. She's actually got two opponents still lingering, Trump and Bernie Sanders. So she's clearly in most of her being trying to be the anti-Donald Trump. But in many ways, she's also kind of distancing herself from Bernie Sanders, you know, pointing out even in some of the debates. As ironic as it sounds, you know, she's making him seem as far left as he is. So she's painting herself into that nice little comfortable corner, like, all right, well, I'm kind of a little bit liberal, but not as liberal as this crazy nut here. And she's doing
it
successfully.
Seem like a moderate. Well, she's got a third opponent, namely the FBI, but that's another thing.
Oh, where's the rim shot? Wait, we should get the rim shot for that. Yes, she's got a third opponent, the FBI. There we go. So, I had to do that.
So
But
a lot of people are saying she is going further to the left than she wants because of Bernie Sanders and trying to grab those Democratic votes, too.
She is now, but she's also appealing to the undersided.
Get away from that.
Yeah. She'll kind of get a lift from it at some point, but then she'll quickly, when she has to, move to the center, and she can easily claim that she always was more towards the center compared to Bernie Sanders. And she's here's the downside of that, though. The downside of having these two guys on either side of you is also you take shit from the two guys on either side of you. I mean, you know, the phenomenon. I've heard the worst stuff about Hillary Clinton being thrown at her from the Bernie Sanders people.
Yeah. That's really amazing. I tell you, Sanders has really made an impact on this election. You know, he's given us some economic food for thought, and he's clearly more likable than either Trump or Hillary. So he's got that going for him, and he has probably articulated an actual message probably better than the other two candidates. I mean, Hillary's, as I said, running an empty campaign. And Trump keeps saying, make America great again. And he has some really good phrases and a big personality, which helps him. But what he needs to do is kind of go into how he's going to do this and that and the other and explain that a little better, I think. I think if he does that, I think he can. Hillary's very beatable, but Trump will have to do that, I think, to beat her.
Yeah, he hasn't been getting well into specifics at all. I'm not crazy about. I mean, I'm enjoying the ride watching this all happen, but the Mexican wall thing is, to me, believe me, I know we have a major problem with immigration and all that, but just focusing on the damn wall over and over, and you know this phrase about Mexico paying for it, it's running a little thin with me.
It's going to be a beautiful wall.
Yeah, I imagine it will be.
That's what he said a couple of times.
Maybe we could just project things on it and like charge people in the southern states to just watch these laser shows, whatever, and that could pay for it.
Yeah, there we go. And maybe Hillary will try to build a wall once she's in the general election, just so she's closer to Trump on the issues to try to get votes. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is her husband and like every president since him has made immigration like immigration and protecting our border is a major issue. But of course, Trump is the only one who gets the crap for it because he talks about this frigging wall.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much virtually every politician who's been out there, you know, Democrat or Republican, mostly Republican, but talks about securing the borders. And, you know, this is just a guy who's actually being forthright and explaining physically how he'll do so. And that scares the hell out of people. So whatever.
Well, get your rim shot ready, because I think.
Oh, OK.
Pink Floyd.
Yes.
Pink Floyd should pay for the wall.
Oh, yes, I know Roger Waters has a lot of money, but even every dime of Roger Waters would only be able to pay for the federal government running for about 30 minutes. So.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a whole other show, taxation and taxing. We'll do another show on that one day.
Okay.
We're primarily talking elections. I like to talk economics one day on another show, but
okay, yeah, that's always a big issue. It was a big issue in the 1992 election that ultimately sank Bush 41,
mm-hmm.
and that was probably the issue that did that. So that's always an issue. Immigration's an issue. Terrorism is now an issue.
Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing: the economics has not been as much an issue. Obviously, with all of us, it's been, but in the election so far, it hasn't been brought up very much, or it doesn't seem that way. You know, with all
it
the stereotypical
phrases.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're
it's
right.
Not been
I think,
thrown around at all.
I think immigration has become more of a forefront, I think, thanks to Trump, you know, in the Republican debates and, you know, the Democratic debates. I didn't get to see most of those. They were on at really weird times. I think there's something fishy going on with the Democratic National Committee. It's almost like they are rolling out the red carpet for Queen Hillary. That's kind of how it seems to me. And the debates were on like really odd times, like during a sports event,
right.
A football game, and another time it was Saturday night, like on a 3-day weekend. And you know, what I want to know is how come Fox News never hosts a Democratic debate? That's what should happen.
They should.
They
I would
really,
love to see that.
If they really want to sharpen their skills, because they'll ask tougher questions than, you know, MSNBC. You think they're going to ask Democrats tough questions, especially Hillary. They ask them tough questions? I doubt it. Fox News will ask the tough questions, I'm sure. I mean, get Bill O'Reilly up there. He won't let anything fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
They'll have some good questions that should be asked.
If Politico can, the website politico.com can do a Republican debate, then certainly Fox can host a Democratic debate.
Yes, yeah, CNBC did a Republican debate. Yeah, that's an argument I've been making for a while. In fact, I even said that once on one of my Facebook posts. Like, how come if CNBC can do the Democratic debate, why not Fox News for the Republican?
Right.
Didn't get too many comments and unfortunately too many likes on that, but. I think it's something for people to think about, you know, because we know some networks lean left and some lean right. And so, why not have that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny with obviously with the degree of frustration with the leading candidates this year, that one would have thought that this would be perhaps, you know. It's hilarious. Everybody says, oh, I wish there was a third party. I wish there was a third party. There is one. There is already a third party. You don't have to make one.
There is one already. And potentially there could have been two more. But go ahead and tell you about your third party candidate, and I'll get to the other two.
All right. Well, as many of you out there know, I sometimes wear it on the sleeve. I have in the last 10 years and maybe more moved more towards the libertarian end of the spectrum. And there is a libertarian party, for those of you who don't know. They've been around. They've been a thing since 1971. They rarely win any elections because they Well, at least for many of their years, they stood on their principles. So they, therefore, you don't win elections when you stand on principles, as ironic as that sounds. But
that's unfortunate, but I think it's true.
Yep. Yes, yes. They've, over the years, had some good candidates. And again, some names escape me, but one of the more popular ones in the early 90s, the 80s, was Harry Brown. And he's got a lot of good quotes, and I think he still has some videos out there. This year's candidate is former Republican Governor Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. He was also the candidate in 2012. He kind of talks the language. He's more than halfway there on many issues. He's kind of like, to many, more of a Republican with a lot of libertarian leanings. So a lot of dyed-in-the-wool libertarians and anarchists are not very happy with him as a candidate, particularly since he selected very liberal Republican Governor Bill Weld as his running mate. Mostly to raise money. So, but although it's a nice little lever to pull when you don't want to pull for the other two people, it's the candidates themselves are, and quite frankly, all three that were running this year were very questionable. John McAfee and Austin Peterson are kind of McAfee is kind of a kook, and Austin Peterson kind of is lacking in some libertarian principles. So, yeah, it's a nice protest vote. I'll probably do it myself, but they're not authentic libertarians. And now, but here, the thing is, since the Ron Paul era, I'm noticing that the mainstream press is a lot more scared of libertarians now than they used to be.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, they're certainly not scared of those that are Democrats. We know that.
Right. Exactly. Well, no, of course not. I mean, they were kind of, you know, just cordial to them into the 90s. And then since the Ron Paul explosion, since 2008, you know, you're starting to see articles now, why libertarian, you know, the mainstream press, you know, criticizing libertarian, why libertarians are wrong. And, you know, why I stopped being a libertarian, all these articles, and they're all BS because the person writing them generally never understood what the principles are, which is basically not to aggress against your fellow human beings, but it gets twisted. Message gets twisted into all, you know, a lot of the leftist factions are taking over or getting into that party. You know, the ones who are only concerned with legalizing pot or, you know, abortion and other fringe issues. I mean, you know, the scope of government in your life should be the overriding concern. And that's being overshadowed by a lot of little weaselly fringe causes. And hopefully they get back to the message one day, and they could be a powerful third party.
Yeah. And, you know, Ross Perot back in 1992, we talked about him earlier. He got 19% of the vote.
Yes,
and
he did.
That was an impressive run. Of course, I think he helped Bill Clinton win that election because I think he siphoned off more votes from Bush than he did Clinton. But
I agree.
He had an impressive run, and you couldn't help but like to watch his 30-minute segments on national networks that were commercial-free. He paid for them himself. He's a billionaire, so he would pay for them himself, and he had some interesting, interesting economic, things that he was talking about. That was, he made an impact. That's for sure. He didn't do as well the second time he ran in 1996. Probably got about 6 or 8% of votes, if I remember correctly. But I think by then he was actually running on the Reform Party,
which
started that party.
Yes,
and
he did.
But he has been the most successful, at least in our lifetime, the most successful third-party candidate.
Do you remember, we'll get into the how it backfired. Well, actually, let's talk about that first. There was also a third-party candidate in 2000 who may, still debatable, but may have been partly responsible for Bush getting in. Do you know who that was?
Ralph Nader.
Right, the Green Party. So
the
that
Green
was an,
Party.
That was
he
an.
He didn't get very many votes, but he, you know, didn't take very many to siphon off just enough votes from one candidate or the other to make a difference, because that was a very close election.
Exactly, exactly. And some people say he might have siphoned up enough, siphoned off enough in a few states to pull those electoral votes from Gore. But again, I've never analyzed the numbers. Do you remember? I remember the first third party candidate from when I was young. Do you remember in 1980, John Anderson?
I was just going to say that name. I remember John Anderson in 1980.
Yeah.
Not to be confused
right.
with the lead singer of Yes, who has the same name.
Exactly.
But,
yeah,
I do remember that. And I think he was the second, actually the third most successful. Ross Perot in 92 and 96 being the two most successful third-party candidates. I think John Anderson probably would be the third, or behind Ross Perot, would be the second highest, second best run in 1980. Didn't he get 4 or 5%?
Yeah, he did, actually. And I just pulled him up on Wikipedia. He's still alive. He's 94 years old, but still out
wow.
there. Yeah, at least you could always tell your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, I ran for president.
Well, if he
barely
would have
garnered a vote
this year, then Bernie Sanders wouldn't be the oldest candidate.
That's right. Yeah, he could pull it off. That would be funny. But I just – it's funny that syndrome that we have. Everybody – obviously, we talk about voting for the lesser of two evils all the time, and that's certainly probably going to be the
case this
year.
Oh, that's certainly the case here this year.
Yeah, yeah, and probably has been for ages and ages. But the whole thing is everyone is terrified to consider a third party because they just think, oh, well, I can't let – the more evil guy get in, so I that third party is throwing away my vote. You know, if I vote for Gary Johnson, oh my God, Hillary's going to get in. Or oh my God, if I vote for Gary Johnson, Trump's going to get in. You know, that's the eternal sickness that we're all suffering from in these elections. So
sadly,
I'm almost thinking
I think that's true. But
yeah,
I finish your thought, and I'll comment on that.
Yeah, I always tell people it might be better if we just had a third and a fourth party candidate. Let's just throw in like a libertarian and like an actual socialist. Let's do four parties. All right, you got the two weasel parties in the center, and then you got the the full freedom party, libertarian. You got, well, we hope, and then you got the full authoritarian guy here. So see what happens.
Well,
hash it all out.
Well, there are two other candidates. Before I get to that, I was going to comment. What were we talking about? About throwing away your vote. Here's the
yes.
thing. If a candidate is polling at 3 or 4%, let's
right.
say Gary Johnson is polling 3 or 4%. And let's say
uh-huh.
somebody is an ABC voter. ABC meaning anybody but Clinton.
Right.
Maybe they don't like Trump. But Trump is polling even with Clinton. Let's say they're both polling around 40%. Just throw in a number there.
Right.
It would make sense for that voter to vote for, if they really didn't want Clinton to get in, to bite the bullet and vote for Trump. Because the polls have been reasonably accurate. Now, if Gary Johnson is, on the other hand, polling, if all three of them are polling at about 30%, you know, roughly, then that's a whole different game. But if a candidate's polling like in the single digits and the two major party candidates are, you know, at 40% or above, if you really don't like either of the candidates about evenly, the major party candidates, then I guess, yeah, it's fine to vote for a third party candidate. But if there's one that you feel is the lesser of the two evils, then in the example that I gave, I would think voting for the lesser of the two evils and kind of sucking it up is the better way to go. But that's my opinion.
Okay, well, here's what we'll do. We'll talk a little about that and the ramifications of that. But let's do a little 3-minute break here, but we're going to play a snippet. I'll
okay.
let you make the choice here. You sent me that fine, that assessment by Judge Napolitano, the great Andrew Napolitano,
yeah.
who used to be on Fox Business.
I wanted to tell
yeah.
you about two other possible third-party candidates. I can do this now, do this later.
Yeah, do it quick,
it now,
and then we'll
quick,
talk.
If that's okay.
Sure, sure.
Okay, number one, David French. He was thinking about running. The National Review, Bill Kristol, not to be confused with the actor Billy Kristol, was really pushing him to run, I guess, and thought about it and decided not to run. He's very critical of Trump, but he decided, and he gave his reasons why he's not running. So he's a candidate that's not running. Another one who's not running, at least not right now, but boy, would it be something if he did, Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
What if Bernie Sanders feels that, you know, the whole superdelegates and the process is so corrupt that, you know what, screw this. I'm going to run as an independent. I'm an independent anyway. That's his party affiliation. I'm going to run as a third party. And then now let's see what happens.
Right.
And I think
I would love
Sanders
to see that.
Ran as a third party. I think he would do better than Ross Perot. Not only could he do better than Ross Perot did, he would have a shot at winning this election. Because he would be the lesser of the three evils by a lot of people.
I'm thinking maybe four, but when we get back, I'll talk about the ramifications of all that and what I'd like to see done or what I'd like to see. But I'll play right now. I'm going to play a little clip, 3 minutes of Judge Andrew Napolitano basically criticizing or commenting on the Hillary email scandal. So we'll do that now. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
That's a good clip.
Welcome to my chambers. Last week, the Inspector General of the State Department issued a scathing report about the comportment of Hillary Rodham Clinton when she was Secretary of State with respect to her use of emails. As everyone by now knows, she caused an information technologist at the State Department, she paid him $5,000 to do this, to migrate her public email account to a private server and her secret email account, the one that contains a means to communicate top secret information from a secure government venue to the server in her home. That migration of the secret email account containing top secret, secret and confidential information is likely the crime of espionage. Mrs. Clinton had argued that what she did was allowed, her phrase. The Inspector General, whose job it is to keep officials in the executive branch compliant with federal law, has rejected that argument by demonstrating conclusively that what Mrs. Clinton did was not allowed. She did it secretly. She did it on her own. She didn't ask for permission, and had she asked for permission, would not have been granted. A couple of interesting things came out of this report. One, Mrs. Clinton used a BlackBerry rather than a laptop or a desktop. And because it was her own BlackBerry and not a government-issued one, it was disabled whenever she was in her office on the seventh floor of the State Department building. So think about it. Whenever the Secretary of State was in her office as the Secretary of State, she was not able to communicate with ambassadors and consuls and colleagues around the world. In order to communicate with them, because she insisted on using her own BlackBerry, she had to leave her office with a security detail, go down to the sixth floor, stand in a hallway, and engage in her emailing under those circumstances. We also learned that there were times when her server went down in her home in Chappaqua, New York, and therefore her BlackBerry went down. And when she was offered a government-issued BlackBerry, she declined to use it. The reason is always the same. Fear of the Freedom of Information Act. Fear of disclosure. Fear of her boss, President Obama, and her colleagues outside her inner circle in the State Department, and the press, and the American public, knowing what she was doing as Secretary of State. All of that is in the hands of the FBI, which will interrogate Mrs. Clinton as soon as the New Jersey and California primaries are concluded next week. What will come out of that interrogation? Probably a recommendation to present what they have to a grand jury. That should lead to an indictment. Welcome to my chamber. Fight the good fight.
For freedom!
Yeah, fat chance, says like most of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree. There's some way she'll slither out of that one, I'm sure. But I think the judge makes a very good point.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
I think he makes a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, there's a certain level after which, you know, your politician is probably not going to jail. Yeah, a local Congress, you know, like a state senator or an assemblyman, yeah, they'll probably arrest them in their office, you know, for stuff. It's happened before. We've had Mayor Marion Barry thrown into jail. But once you reach a certain level, like Senate, Congress, whatever, you ain't getting touched. And if you're a president, you're certainly never getting touched. Sad, but such is our alleged democracy.
As Hammer used to say, you can't touch this.
I can't touch sin. No, certainly not. People will stop you. People will shoot you first. But by the way, I'm staring. I'm watching CNN coverage, and I'm being treated to Melania and Ivanka Trump here. It's always nice.
That's always a nice thing to be treated to.
yeah. It's very good. He's in Briarcliff Manor doing his speech.
I see that. Yeah, Donald Trump is speaking as we are speaking, doing a show in Briarcliff Manor. I am looking at the results. Clinton did win New Jersey. She's got 58% of the vote. So Sanders is 40, roughly, with 18% of the precincts reporting. And so she is Clint's New Jersey. She's ahead in New Mexico by a lot, with only 4% reporting. She's ahead in South Dakota. Don't know what California will bring, but seems like they're kind of throwing in the towel a little bit, or just trying just to get this nomination thing over with and vote for the favorite.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. At this point, it's just jawboning. It's you know, just the final stretch. So, but yeah, the final stretch is about a 12 horse lead. You know.
Right, and you know she's going to win the nomination anyway. Even if she loses California, just based on the fact that it's not winner-take-all, it's proportionally divided. So she was always going to get a certain amount of delegates. So she got 47% as opposed to 53%. You know, she's still getting enough delegates, that same proportion. Here's an interesting thing about the Clinton-Sanders race. Early in this contest, Clinton had about 1,200 delegates and Sanders about 500. At one point.
Right.
So she was way ahead. Okay. Of her, you know, she by about a 5-2 margin.
Right.
Prior to tonight, she has about 2,300 delegates and he has about 1,600 delegates. There's still a 700 delegate difference now, the same difference as it was back in, I think, February when it was 1,200 to 500, which means that Sanders has been batting 500 ever since late February.
Interesting. What we were getting at
was some momentum.
Yeah. I know. I kind of was hoping in a way. Mind you, I don't agree with any of his economic solutions, but you know, I was kind of hoping for him to just kind of take off. You know, just like come around the outside and start kicking her butt. But what you were saying earlier about
I found myself in the same position as you, actually. You know. For similar reasons, I guess.
Yeah. And, Trump was kind of that was happening, you know, no matter what. I wasn't overly thrilled with anyone, on the Republican side as a candidate anyway, but here's the interesting thing. You were saying earlier about the possibility or the desirability about Bernie running as a third party. Now the Democrats would never allow that. That would immediately be squelched.
They would hate that. I mean, there would be a big uproar, and they would really, really try to talk them out of it. I don't know what they would do, but they would try to do whatever. Maybe she would promise a cabinet position or something. I don't know.
She'd have to do something.
There would be some behind the doors talk, I'm sure, on that.
Absolutely. But it would be interesting to see that if he were to do that, how much he could draw. And if there were a fourth, and there is, I mean, you have the Libertarian candidate. If there
That's
was
right.
a serious challenge from the left, and well, you can't really say for libertarians from the right, but you know, a serious third and fourth party, you know, what I would love to just see how much each of them would draw away from each respective party. I mean, I'd have to speculate that Gary. Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary Johnson.
Speculate that Gary Johnson would probably take more from the Republican side, maybe a few Democrats, and Bernie Sanders would probably take more from the Democrat side and hardly any Republicans, I'm sure. But
I would tend to agree with you. The question is what percentage. I think Bernie Sanders would take a bigger percentage from the Democrats than just in general. I think he would do better in this election than Gary Johnson. Bernie Sanders has had a lot of exposure, and I think he would easily be in the double digits, I'm sure, if he were to run. I can't count Gary Johnson out, but you know, people haven't heard of him, and unless he can turn the corner and get some name recognition, he's going to end up like Martin O'Malley. Who's Martin O'Malley?
Exactly.
He was the third candidate in the Democratic race that was getting 1% of the vote.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, former governor.
Seems like such a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. And find out about Martin O'Malley. Did you know that they called him the Rock and Roll Governor? That was kind of his nickname.
Oh, I thought I had heard that one.
Yeah, I read that in Wikipedia. I certainly didn't see it on CNN.
Oh, interesting. Is there a reason?
Yeah.
Does he have a preference?
I think he's played in a band. I think that's why.
Oh, okay. See, now I'm curious.
Yeah.
These are the things that make me go to Wikipedia, you know. Okay, there he is.
Yeah.
Let's see. I don't see any guitars or drums. I see a stained glass window. I see his wife. Oh, I was hoping to see like an instrument here. Nothing about that. No, that'd be interesting.
It just mentioned it, I think, in one sentence, and that's it.
Oh, interesting. I'll look for that later. Yeah, the other candidates don't play any instruments, so. I would have loved.
Maybe that's what Hillary should do.
Yeah, I would have loved after the Johnson was about to accept his nomination, I would have loved to see Ron Paul step out of the shadows and say, take it against me, MF-er. He would have been a great friggin' just back as a libertarian candidate. This would have been the year to cash in, but he's getting old, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess. Yes, I think Dr. Paul just turned 80, so I don't think. He's going to be 80.
Wouldn't it have been interesting if Ron Paul ran on the libertarian ticket and his son runs as a Republican?
That would be hilarious.
You've never had a father and son run in the same election in two different parties before. That's never happened, I don't think.
That would be interesting. You had the Hamilton Fish, remember him? He was the big Republican in Upper Westchester, and the son ran as a Democrat, but it wasn't at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
His son, I guess I kind of like him personally and all. He seems relatively honorable compared to most politicians, but he's not by any means a true – he's a Republican with libertarian leanings. He's not a true libertarian by any means. You know, he pretty much supported the wars. He might be for easy – he's against the Patriot Act. That's very commendable. I've grown to hate it the past few years. He's got some good leanings, but he's still pretty much a Republican conservative for the most part.
Okay. I missed who you were talking about. I'm sorry.
Rand Paul, Ron's son.
The son, yeah. He was kind of a different candidate for the Republican Party. I saw him in the debates, and he seemed to have a different angle than the majority of the other Republicans in the race. I didn't think he would get that far in the race, and he lasted a while, but I think it was about 9 to 10 in the race before he dropped out. But I had a feeling he probably wouldn't be in the top three or four for sure. You know, Marco Rubio, I think, had a shot, but then I think he made a few too many, threw a couple of key interceptions, and I think he lost it on that.
Yeah, he doesn't, I don't know how to put this. He doesn't really grab you per se. I didn't really see any major, no one in that field, assuming I were still on the conservative end, no one would have drawn me to them and say, you know, this is somebody I can support. Trump is pretty much riding. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just say there was no one candidate that I thought was way above everybody else on the Republican side. I think there's about four or five that I kind of would gravitate on that I thought were the best. Trump was not one of those four or five, but I didn't really have one that I thought, wow, this is definitely, you know, my guy here. I didn't really have that feeling as the process was going along. I thought Jeb Bush actually was one of the more presidential candidates on that stage, but I think he just got muffled by Trump. Trump has a big personality. I don't think Trump is that effective of a debater, but people like to watch him. And I noticed that the moderators asked him more questions than they did, say, Mike Huckabee or somebody like that, who I thought also was quite presidential on that stage. But, you know, Trump just basically drowned out everybody else on the Republican side.
Yeah, yeah, in many ways he did. For many years now, particularly for the past year, we have been obviously a society under attack from, as we call it, political correctness. Lack of logic as it pertains to politics. So on the surface, he seems the answer to that. Like if you're looking at it from the outside, what have we been saying as voters since the beginning of time? I want a guy who tells the truth, who tells it like it is, who's not afraid to go up against. But that's what we always say. And here it is
and
now.
You know what? Trump is that guy.
Donald. Yeah, there's your guy, allegedly. So this is the guy that meets all that criteria. And the best one is I want a guy who's not a politician. So here's the guy who really meets all that criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And it kind of works on a few levels, and on many levels it doesn't. So
yeah, I mean he's just done things different and it just worked. I mean, nobody I think saw this coming. People didn't take his candidacy seriously when he first announced. And
yeah,
they thought, you know, within maybe 5 or 6 months he'd be out of the race. And he kept saying controversial things over and over. You know, a lot of WTF moments for sure. And
right.
Those moments
good.
Actually helped him in the polls. I mean, he kept doing better and better. I mean, who could, you know, he's made a lot of, you know, insulting comments and it helped him. It's like, wow, how does that happen?
I think the psychology of it is, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, people are, you know, they're seeing, particularly in the last few months, some really insane things happening around the world. Obviously, the whole refugee crisis, you know, the economic crisis is one thing. Immigration skyrocketing, illegal immigration and legal skyrocketing. They see the political correctness monster, you know, the hypocrisy,
yeah. You
know, people get complaining about innocuous statements and then real atrocities happening before their eyes and people don't give it a second glance. You know, as an example, I mean, you know, people are criticizing Trump's, you know, rhetoric against Muslims, you know, about wanting to do a temporary ban. Meantime, his Democratic opponent has actually dropped bombs on and killed many Muslims in countries that we haven't officially declared war on, and nobody seems as upset about that.
Yeah, well, just to tell you something about the media. Most of the media leans left, and they seem to kind of turn a blind eye to the actions of, you know, their brethren, I guess, for lack of a better term. But someone like Donald
right.
Trump, he's just the most horrible thing that's happened since, you know, whatever. And that's kind of what we're dealing with.
The biggest scoop of hypocrisy is basically with the whole refugee crisis. I mean, you're watching, you know, I read the firsthand reports. I try to go all over the internet. So I get it right from Sky News and right from the British newspapers. I mean, in some, not all, but in some areas of Europe, there is basically a rape epidemic going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Germany or another country that actually put out their government, and I'll find it, I'll put it out there. They put out these guidelines as to how to keep the refugees, how women can prevent the refugees from raping them. And it was basically something, part of it was to the effect of, like, you know, don't wear skimpy clothing, don't taunt them, don't entice them. And I'm thinking to myself, where are the U.S. and the Western feminists on all this? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, they scream about a rape culture and, you know, the whole teach men not to rape, and which most of us know not how not to rape. And this just gets, you know, a poo-poo.
Mm-hmm.
And just multiply that by about 500, and you've just got basically the effect that the realization that everyone's coming to, that the media, you know, the television and most of the print media are becoming a joke, and people don't need them anymore.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's the media bias is there, no question about it. You hope that you read some articles that are level, and I think there are plenty that are, but there's a lot of them that have that twist words to make it sound, make it sound worse than it is, or something that it isn't.
Absolutely.
You know, like when Trump said the temporary ban of Muslims, that's a position I don't agree on, by the way. But I will say, I have to repeat what he said. He said temporary ban. He didn't say a ban.
Right.
And the media is leaving out the word temporary, which is a very key word in that phrase. You can't leave that word out.
Right.
That's a good example of how the media can manipulate things. And there's a lot of other examples, too, but that's just one example.
Oh. Of course. Of course. Did you happen to hear – we'll play 2 minutes of entertaining Trump momentarily, but did you happen to hear – I guess it was – was on the order of a month and a half, 2 months ago, Trump was doing a speech outlining his foreign policy. And it didn't really get that much press comparatively to all his other sound bites. But he sounded, through much of that speech, he sounded like Ron Paul. He basically – and again, I think that's why the media did not play it, because – he was basically saying, look, you know, I want to defend our borders. I want to keep our military strong. He says, but I want to get out of all these countries. We're done. We're done there. We're done policing the world. We're done initiating conflict, unless we're attacked, of course. So for much of the speech, I was like, I could deal with that. But it would be very hard to get sort of an allegedly anti-war person on the left to sort of come around to that. I would doubt that would be enough to entice anyone on the other side over to him.
Yeah,
especially
it's amazing
when,
like, what doesn't get traction, like the example that you just said and some of his comments that have gotten traction.
Right.
I mean, I haven't seen the clip that you're talking about, so I can't comment on the everything on it, but it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, that he may have sounded more presidential there and actually sounded like he had a vision of some kind, whereas all the sound bites you hear from him are just silly clown stuff that he just says that kind of, flying by the seat of his pants.
Yeah. And I will agree, there hasn't been as much substance as I would like, but this was actually a speech of substance, and I'll link to it out there. I'll actually, I'm sure I'll get trashed by half of my Facebook friends, but I'll link to it at some point. I could care less now.
It's worth posting because that's something that should be out there. Sounds like anyway. And you know, if you want something substantive from Trump, and he said something substantive, then the media should make somewhat of an issue about it at least. But I guess all they're interested in is just reality TV type of things and insults. So
right,
that's
exactly
what it is.
And in the spirit of that, Brad, we're going to play 2 minutes of that. We're going to take some of our Trump lines. I think you emailed this one to me, Trump speech lines, and we'll just play these for a little over 2 minutes so we can have a little break. We are over the 1 hour mark, so we got about a half hour left here. If you'd like to stay on, it's up to you.
I will. I can stay on.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. So let's play 2 minutes of Trump, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little more.
I beat China all the time. When was the last time you saw a Chevrolet in Tokyo? When do we beat Mexico at the border? They're laughing at us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. The big lie, Obamacare. $5 billion we spent on a website. I hire people. They do a website. It costs me $3. Are you running? Are you not running? I am officially running for President of the United States. We need a leader that wrote the art of the deal. I will be the greatest jobs president that God ever created. Free trade can be wonderful if you have smart people, but we have people that are stupid. I like China. I just sold an apartment for $15 million to somebody from China. They have bridges that make the George Washington Bridge look like small potatoes. I don't need anybody's money. It's nice. I'm really rich. I love the Saudis. Many are in this building. Obama, a year ago, Yemen was a great victory. 2 weeks later, the place was blown up. We're dying. We're dying. We need money. Thank you, darling. But Mr. Trump, you're not a nice person.
We don't need nice.
That's true. But actually, I am. I think I am a nice person. We have losers. We have losers. I would build a great wall, and nobody builds walls better than me, believe me. Nobody would be tougher on ISIS than Donald Trump. We won't be using a man like Secretary Kerry. He goes into a bicycle race at 72 years old and falls and breaks his leg. I won't be doing that. The American dream is dead. But if I get elected president, I will bring it back. Bigger and better and stronger than ever before, and we will make America great again. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if I'm enamored or even can imagine like any one person making America. You can make yourself great again. Making America great again is starting to fall flat with me as well. No one person,
I think
no
it
little
takes
group
a team. You have to have a good team to do that. And that's quite a catchphrase. I mean, it's even on baseball caps. But I think in the upcoming months he'll need to come up with more substantive rhetoric, and I think it's the only way that he can win this election.
Yeah, it's an interesting phrase, and it sounds nice, certainly, but I don't know. You're going to have to show how. Here's an interesting.
Yeah, I agree. What he should do is build the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, and make the Clinton Foundation play for it.
Oh, damn it. I've scrolled away from the rim shot. Oh, crap. but I could do... Nope, here it is. Yeah, well, here, we got it. Rim shot. Yeah. Here's an interesting controversial internet radio host, Christopher Cantwell, who's a former anarchist who is now supporting Trump. because he said, what's the point of advocating a free society if you're going to let tons of people into the country who don't believe in a free society? So take care of that first and then worry about the stateless society after that. So he actually came out with a statement. He said, I don't really care what Trump does. I mean, I don't care if he even executes Edward Snowden. I don't care if he gets rid or keeps the Patriot Act. He said, I'm just happy that he's going to bring pain upon my enemies. I'm kind of paraphrasing. And I thought it was just kind of humorous until I realized as I read a lot of other people's justification for voting for him. And I admit there's a little bit of it in the back of my head. He's going to, if he were to get in, there's going to be a bunch of leftists and liberals with having conniption fits. I mean, the college campuses are going to go crazy. Certain segments of the population are going to go crazy. It's just going to be wild. There's going to be people, they say, are going to leave the country. They're going to go to Canada. Strangely, those people never say that they're going to go to Mexico. They're always going to flee to Canada.
Yeah, I would say they only go one way. Yeah.
How about, get some balls. Go to Mexico. Yeah, what the hell? I know where I'm
going to go to Canada if Trump gets elected.
Yeah, you know what? Go to Mexico, MF-er. Let's see how you do down there.
That may be the one reason to elect Trump.
Yeah. There'll be a whole slew of them breaking for the border. That's fine with me. But if I were to leave the country, it wouldn't be because of a particular president or because of a particular politician. It would be because of the general way that our country's politics and methods and means are going. So, and it wouldn't be for Canada. I'd head for South America, but we'll talk about that on another show too.
No, it'll be on the travel show.
Yes, the travel show. That's coming up soon. And Terrence, you better be here to talk about your travels too. He's listening now. I know he is. Bastard. But and so in all honesty, it's funny the slogans that have greased our ears the past 30 years, the hope and change. And I don't know. Did Romney have what was Romney's slogan? Did he have one?
I don't think he had one. I mean,
I don't think so.
You know, Obama, I got to tell you, whether you agree with Obama or not, he ran a good campaign in 2008. And he had.
Okay.
He was sharp in the debates. I mean, he and Hillary Clinton were the two that were left standing, and I thought he handily beat her in the debates. He ran on substance. You know, I said earlier that she wasn't running on substance. He actually ran on substance, and he had to get overcome the fact that he wasn't a celebrity when he started out, and she was. So
right.
You got to hand it to him for running a good campaign in 2008.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now,
do you remember
that? I disagree with some of his decisions, especially some of the more recent ones that he's made, and that's for another. That could be for another time, but that he did run a good campaign. I have to admit, he ran a good campaign in 08.
Yeah. Do you remember the sort of the Hillary opposition that was developing when Obama was starting to move into the? The catbird seat. I mean, they had a little group called, what was it called? Puma. Remember that? Party Unity, my ass.
I think I do remember that.
Look it up.
Yeah,
it's out there.
I do. And that was some Hillary supporters, right?
That was the Hillary supporters. And
They
have been. Yeah, it was remarkable. I kind of didn't really follow it along as much, but. Basically, a lot of people on her side were pissed off, and they were like, "No, we're not standing. We're not going to let a little half-assed." There was some vicious things said about Obama by her side, and I'll find. I should have.
Oh yeah.
Found.
Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Particularly one by her husband.
Yes,
did I even repeat
it here? Something, and she herself said something. Shame on you, Barack Obama. I mean, she sounded. You know, you could see the smoke coming out of her ears when she said that. I mean, she was really fit to be tied. And, you know,
oh no,
she expected a coronation, and they were seeing, both Clintons were seeing that this coronation year is slipping away. And it did.
Coronation turned into defecation. But yeah, her husband, and I'll be fair, I don't know if it was at that time or a little later. He said 4 years ago, this guy would have been getting us coffee.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There was something that there's some implications in some of his statements. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I guess now we're going to, I believe, and I don't have numbers in front of me, but I would speculate that the vast majority, oh, what do I see here? Breaking news, Bernie Sanders wins North Dakota. Oh, well, it's like, what, one delegate?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he won North Dakota. God bless him.
Wow, he came from behind because he was trailing by about, I think, 7 or 8 percentage points. He's trailing New Mexico by 6.5.
Yeah, I see that. Oh, he's catching up a little. It was worse before. He seems to be narrowing it. 30% of the votes in.
Okay. I'm showing him ahead 64% in North Dakota.
Okay.
He's trailing South Dakota by about almost 8%, though.
Yeah, that's what I see here, too. But here's the funny thing. I mean, back in 2008, I would speculate, and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I would speculate that a large majority of Hillary Clinton's supporters ended up voting for Obama. This year, as I've seen it, you know, the Bernie supporters seem, I have to commend, I know they get a lot of flack, and I agree a lot of them are not in the right sphere in economics, but I have to say, they're very dedicated people. I don't know if they're dedicated enough to stay home on election day. They're not going to go for Trump. We know that. But to stay home on election day or to go third party. And some preliminary polls are indicating that, as much as I love you guys all, the Bernie supporters that I know personally on Facebook and life are actually kind of nice. I don't like to lash out. And I think they're well-intentioned. But according to this, they've been very critical of Hillary, so I commend them. 70% of them are going to go vote for her anyway, according to
she's the lesser of the two evils in their mind.
Correct, correct. So,
yeah.
So it was a nice,
little.
Yeah, I believe it too. So, I mean, principle is good, principle is great, but you have to take it all the way for it to count.
Yeah, well,
Muhammad Ali.
Some of that may be. Muhammad Ali said that. Interesting. Wow. Okay.
He said something.
Yeah,
no, he didn't.
He said
something.
A lot of
Well, basically, he was a guy who, you know, he's not a draft dodger. He was a draft opposer because he took his medicine, he got arrested, and he went up against the system. Most people will not, whether it's voting or anything else, will not do that.
Yeah, interesting. So, well, I think in the case of some of the Bernie supporters who would support Hillary, some of that may be an anti-Trump vote too, because because of some of the things that he's said over the last several months. I think some of them, I guess, are outraged or whatever. And I think he says some stuff that I don't like, but I guess I don't take him that stuff too seriously because it's like he's kind of being a clown when he says it. I mean, he doesn't sound presidential when he says it, and he shouldn't say it, some of the stuff, but I won't go as far as say he's a racist or some of these other fancy left-wing buzzwords that are out there. There's a lot of them out there. And
misogynist.
Misogynist, homophobe. Intolerant, bigot, name your buzzword. And I think most of those words have been applied to Trump. I don't think he's a racist. I don't think he hates people who are Latino. I don't think it's that bad. I think he just says a lot of things that are very provocative. And the media has made it more provocative. They've just fueled the flames, I think.
Right. But this time they're feeding it because he just doubles down and goes back at them. You know, if it were John Kasich they were saying this about, he would waver and cower in the corner and apologize and lollygag.
Mm.
Trump is doing none of that. He's drawing a segment of the population out, and this is the opportunity to cast your ire upon the fire and just run with it.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. It's really. He's exposing the media is what he's doing.
Well, yeah, and he's apparently playing it well. I mean, I certainly didn't think he'd emerge as the nominee. It appears like that's what's going to happen. He's clinched the number of delegates, and I don't think there'll be any stuff going on at the convention that something weird that would not make him the nominee. I don't think that'll happen. I think Republicans probably need to accept this, and for the most part, barring something unusual, they probably just need to suck it up and accept them, and the leadership needs to work with them. I think they need to work together. I think Paul Ryan has been effective for the most part in working with him. I don't think there's any hurry for Paul Ryan to endorse Trump. And, everybody would say, he's a speaker. He's got to endorse him right now. Well, hang on a minute. It's 4 or 5 months before the election. There's some division here. There's some controversy here. He doesn't need to endorse Trump right away. He can wait a little bit. That's fine. No, I have no problem with that at all. I think he did basically endorse him, within the last few days. But why the rush? Why is such a rush? You know, the media is just making a frenzy out of it.
Well, this can only get more entertaining as time goes on. A friend of mine, Kevin, said, wouldn't it be funny if these two could be co-presidents? Wouldn't it be the four most fun years ever? Bernie and Trump.
Bernie and Trump. Oh, wouldn't that be funny? Yeah.
Oh, it would be hilarious.
They're the only true New Yorkers in this race.
Actually, yes, this is true. And here's another thing regarding this whole racist blah, but gobbledygook. I mean, the guy has been dealing his whole life with New York liberals. He's been in the circles of like Chuck Schumer, Mike Bloomberg, even going back to Dinkins and Koch, and probably tons of he's basically for most of his life been a New York liberal. Not that he's like outright leftist or anything, but he's supported.
No.
He's been in cahoots with all these people. He's cut deals with them so he can get things built. So that's where he's been his whole career. And you probably can't even say that about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, probably. Bernie Sanders, you know, his contingency is a bunch of white people in Vermont. So.
Yeah. And college students.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And college students. But. I mean, you know, that's the wrong thing. You want to throw stuff at Trump. The racist and misogynist stuff is wearing thin, and that only makes him stronger because people are sick of the word racist and misogynist because it doesn't apply 9/10 of the time.
I know. It almost makes you want to support him and vote for him just to tell the media, you know, the heck with this, I'm going to vote for him. You're going to be like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, and people will do it, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you want to hold, you'd like to think that you're voting for somebody for the right reasons. And getting back at the system is nice. Go ahead.
Well, some organizations, when they vote for their officers, if there's more than two people, what they'll do is they'll have a first-round ballot, and if nobody gets more than 50%, then the candidate who had the fewest number of votes will drop out, and then they'll vote on the remaining candidates a second time, and the process repeats itself until there are two candidates and they vote on the winner of those two.
And, a runoff process.
It's a runoff process, yeah. I don't know the exact name of it, but they do that in Toastmasters, actually. Officers and Toastmasters District and International. Too bad they don't do that here. Because then, you know, you could vote for that third-party candidate with 4% of the vote in the polls. And then, assuming that that person is the least vote-getter, you could vote for the lesser of the two evils on the two major party candidates, if that's what it comes down to. So, but they don't do it that way, so it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, as we have 10 minutes left here, let's give Bernie
Not even that.
Yeah,
so
about that
time. We gave the other two.
Some equal time.
So like a dog. We didn't do that either.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that right now. This is Hillary barking like a... Where the hell? Oh, here we go. Hillary Clinton barking like a dog. Who let the dogs out?
You know?
Who let the dogs out?
You know?
Because...
Yes, we
what
know.
What difference at this point does it make?
It's funny, Hillary. That's what...
Well,
let's do that. Would you like to hear
the question
the
is, what kind of dog was that? Was she imitating? Do you think it was, I don't know, was it a schnauzer or kind of a Great Dane?
Definitely,
I like a Great Dane.
Definitely smaller than a Jack Russell, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would say so too, yeah. But go ahead.
So should I play the 180 seconds why you'll vote for Bernie? Or that could be a whole show in itself.
You can play it if you want. We have about 8 minutes. We can do that.
Okay, 3 minutes of that, and then we'll launch into the finale.
Here's the simple truth, that in America we have millions and millions of working people who are working hard but are not making enough money to put bread on the table or to take care of their kids, and that has got to end.
Today, all over America, you got mom working, you got dad working, occasionally you have the kids working, and we still don't have enough money to pay the bills. Something is fundamentally wrong about that. The problems we face did not come down from the heavens. They are made by bad human decisions. And good human decisions can change them. It is time that the United States of America join the rest of the industrialized world and guaranteed health care to all people as a right, not a privilege. Given the incredible wealth and income inequality in America today, we need fair elections, which means public funding of elections. My Republican friends just decided to put another $38 billion into the military. Maybe we can cut military spending a little bit and put it into education. 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to vote. Change takes place because people struggle. Within the next month, I will introduce legislation that will make every public college and public university tuition free. I am in this business because I have 4 beautiful kids and I have 7 beautiful grandchildren. And like you, I want to make sure that the world that we leave them is a beautiful world where people can live full and dignified lives. I don't want to see a world where people are struggling and stepping all over each other. And we can do it. We can provide health care to all of our people. We can create decent paying jobs. We can reverse climate change and transform our energy system. We can raise wages. We can make sure that every person in this country gets the education they need and desire. This is not some type of utopian dream. It can happen. It really can. But it will not happen unless we stand up and fight back for not only ourselves, but for our kids and future generations. Let's do it.
It was kind of bittersweet listening to that as I see the Clinton election results rolling through on the screen here in her favor.
Poor Bernie. Almost swept the primary. North Dakota, you know, Bernie kicked butt in North Dakota, but Clinton did very well in Jersey. And South Dakota, she's about 8 points ahead. And New Mexico, she's ahead. So, yeah. Sanders having only a marginal night here.
Yeah, yeah, poor bastard. But we could probably go through that speech and parse it and compare what.
Right. Hey,
compare
what I want
the
to
intentions
tell you is,
to the results.
Have you ever seen the Saturday Night Live skit "Burn Your Enthusiasm"?
Oh,
with Larry
excellent.
David and Bernie Sanders.
Highly recommend watching. Yes, it's great. It's all over YouTube. You can find it.
It's on YouTube. Anyone who hasn't seen it has got to see it. It's hysterical. Larry David does such a good Bernie Sanders. And that clip is a very good spoof on the show Curb Your Enthusiasm, which Larry David starred in. And if you've never seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, it's basically like Seinfeld on steroids. It's much more raw than Seinfeld. Of course, you can say more things on HBO than you can NBC, but it's kind of similar in the scope where, you know, they take minute things and they just, you know, blow it up into something big. And they do that in this skit. And the skit is, it was done after the Iowa caucuses, which Bernie Sanders narrowly lost. And it's a spoof on that as well. And so anyone in the audience here, look at YouTube, Burn Your Enthusiasm. Burn is spelled B-E-R-N, Your Enthusiasm. It's a funny skit.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely look for that. And all sorts of funny things out there involving all three remaining candidates. And some of the non-remaining candidates.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of great Ted Cruz humor out there as well. So John Kasich, not so much.
You know, Ted Zeppelin. They had all the members of Led Zeppelin looking like Ted Cruz in a meme.
Yeah, yeah.
And I posted that on my Facebook page a while back.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. The humor is like superseding the reality in this campaign, and it's maybe it's for a good cause. Maybe if people just at some point realize the lunacy of this whole process, that will be our wake up call. Because
go ahead.
No, all the problems that Bernie so heartfeltly outlined there don't go away because of one politician or one group of politicians or hating one particular class of people or taking money from rich people. There's a lot of underlying causes and they really have to be understood.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And here's an interesting thing. And both major party candidates have very high unlikability factors. I think both of them polling around 60% unlikable. When's the last time you can say that in a presidential election? I don't know if that's ever happened.
I don't think it has. Yeah, it's bizarre. Just
it's strange to have one candidate with more than 50% unlikable. Here you got both candidates, and then more than 50%.
Yeah,
it should be interesting. But we got about a minute left. I guess any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Well. Consider exploring alternative parties and don't try to really understand the underlying problems of society. Don't just say, oh, that's just some right wing or that's just some left wing lunacy. Really just read up and listen to things and you'll understand people and just try to calm down when it comes to this whole mob mentality in society, whether it's elections or not. You're just going to get drawn into it. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I guess my final thoughts would be know who you're voting for. Don't vote for somebody just because of celebrity status. You know, it's happened here in the New York Senate, and it could happen. It kind of happened in both parties, I think, in the primaries.
Right.
So get to know the candidates. Get to know what they stand for and understand the background of the candidates and, you know, is that something you want to have as president, one way or the other? And just really do Google and Wikipedia as much as you can and get to know what you're voting for.
I agree, Brad. And when all else fails, you can just rejoice in knowing that you still have a lot of control over your own life. Not completely. Don't let them take it from you. That's the big thing. So we're going to take this out with Linkin Park. So, Fred, thank you again. We'll do this more often. I want people to call in. Take care, everyone.
Okay, next time maybe they will.